Coming up on Chasing the Natty, week one of the 2024 college fantasy football season is officially in the books, and we've got a ton to cover today. We'll be discussing how you should be reacting to some disappointing week one performances from some top players. We'll talk about some players you should be avoiding on the waiver wire, and then we'll get to the best part, the players you should be prioritizing on the waiver wire this week in order to make your teams better going forward. We've got all that and more coming right after this. This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast. All right, welcome in everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful time this Labor Day weekend. This week one of college football has been an absolute blast. We are the College Fantasy Football Podcast on the Campus Decanton Podcast Network. You can find us on all of your podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday and Wednesday morning during the season at 6 a.m. sharp. If you want to support the great work we're doing here, head on over to campusdecanton.com. Subscribe there with any of our phenomenal tiers. We got content ranging on all sorts of college football games, whether it's CFF, Devy, CDC, College IDP, College DFS. Really, if you play it, we've got content with us, tools, rankings, everything you need to succeed. If you want to get in touch for whatever reason, you can find me in the show on Twitter. I am at @CFF_Jared. The show is at Chasing the Natty. And y'all, riding solo today, but man, am I excited. Y'all, we got a ton to cover today. So little to see, so much time. Hold on. Strike that. Reverse it. So much to see. So much to talk about, so little time. We'll get there. You guys can tell I'm not in my week or my midseason form yet, but that's fine. We got plenty to discuss, plenty to get around here. And pretty much all I got to say is, y'all, again, week one's here. What wild, crazy weekend we had. Not too much in terms of, you know, upset departments or anything like that. But, you know, got to see a lot of our favorite teams. Fantasy scoring was just out the wazoo this weekend. I had a couple of leagues where people are easily hitting the 300s with some of their just crazy performances this week. I mean, shoot, Ashton Giante went off. Tet McMillan was setting records. Damon Ward going absolutely nuts. Good call by me. Last week on our Sit Start show there, he went absolutely nuts. Again, just so much high scoring for fantasy this weekend. We'll see if that continues down the stretch this year. But for right now, we're definitely all bathing in some awesome fantasy weekends here. But like I said, we got a lot to talk about. So we're actually going to jump right into things today, y'all. Got a couple of things I want to clear out real quick and just remind you guys what we're doing with our in-season content here at Campus of Canton and at Chasing the Natty when it comes to CFF content. We got two shows during the season as we've had the last couple of years. Again, on Mondays at 6 a.m., you will be seeing our recap and waiver wire shows. That's where you're going to see, you know, our freakout scale, some waiver wire traps, and then obviously the guys you'll be targeting. And then on Wednesday mornings, that will be our preview and start sit shows. We're changing those up a little bit this year. You'll hear a bit more about that on Wednesday's show in terms of what that's going to look like this year. You can also check out last week's episode with the week one preview and get a kind of a glimpse as to what that is going to look like moving forward. And then in addition, make sure you check out my weekly waiver wire article, which will be put out on Sundays. You'll actually get that a day before the waiver wire show for Chasing the Natty, and that'll include usually three at each position and then one tight end that I go real deep dive, and then I add some honorable mentions down below. Kind of gives you a little preview as to what we're going to be talking about on the show. But here on the show, we're actually going to hit you with even more players than we would be giving in that article, so buckle up. We're about to talk about a lot of players. So again, let me just give you guys a recap or a preview, really, for those of you who are just joining us maybe this year or maybe don't remember really how things were from last year. These preview shows are broken down really into three main segments, obviously the third one being the biggest one where we'll talk about, you know, all the players are going to add. But we usually start off with what we call the freakout list, that or the freakout scale, excuse me. That is where we'll be discussing some big names, had some disappointing games this past weekend. What are we doing with them moving forward? Then we'll be talking about the waiver wire traps, some guys that had really big weekends that I'm going to tell you do not go and grab off the waiver wire for one reason or another. And then, obviously, like I said, the third one, that'll be the meat of the show. We'll be getting into a lot of those players that I want you to add to your CFF teams moving forward. So, without further ado, I think we go ahead and get started with the freakout list here. We got six players. Normally, we'll probably cut this down to probably 2 to 4 players per week, but being week one, there were quite a few people that we had questions about coming out of this weekend. In fact, shout out to our NIL tier over at campusacant.com. I gave them 9 players that I was kind of struggling with, of like, all right, who do I put on the show? And I'm like, normally I'm going to do, 2 to 4, but man, I can't narrow this down more than 6. And those guys over there helped me out a ton with kind of breaking down at least pretty much the bottom 3 that were cut off. So a couple names you're probably not going to see here that you might have questions about. Ricky White, Squirrel White, and TJ Harden were the 3 that the NIL tier decided not to discuss today. For one reason or another, I think it's pretty clear whether or not you should be moving forward with them. If you got questions, hit me up at @CFF_Jared, and I'll be willing to answer your questions regarding those guys. But for those of you who do not know, once again, just kind of giving some recaps here, giving you guys some information as to how these things work. The first segment here is the freakout scale. And like I said, this is us trying to gauge, some big time players, some guys we've been relying on, whether they're drafted highly or later on in the season, guys we've been starting week to week, have a bad performance. What are we thinking about that moving forward? And this was an idea come up with by our good friend Nate Marquise a couple of years ago, and I've been kind of running with it ever since. Got to give him credit every time we do this because it's such an ingenious idea. Basically, this is a 1 to 10 scale. And 1 is doesn't matter, don't care what they did. You start them with confidence the next week, no issue there whatsoever. Then you get up to 3, you're kind of monitoring things a little bit more closely. You kind of keep an eye on the camp reports, whether it's an injury maybe, or potentially like you're trying to see like, all right, are they getting... All right, talking about this guy, getting him more involved next week. Then you get up to him 5. That's where you're usually kind of, before you're kind of potentially benching him. And then you're actively looking on the waiver wire for some potential backup options in case things continue to get worse for them. 8 is bench him now. Maybe you don't, maybe at that point you're considering dropping him, but you know for a fact there's no way you're putting him in your starting lineup moving forward. And then 10 is just straight drop him. Like, don't even worry about it anymore. There's like, he is the perfect candidate for you to just go and grab somebody else for. And so, again, we got 6 players here today. And the first 2 we'll start off with are 2 running backs. We got Gavin Sawchuk, running back out of Oklahoma, and Damian Martinez, the running back out of Miami, Florida. Sawchuk, I have already at a 5. I'm already, if I drafted him, I'm already starting to look for a backup plan. I'm making running back a priority on the waiver wire. 1, because again, running back options off the waiver wire are fewer and farther between than, wide receivers or even quarterbacks sometimes. And so I'm going to go ahead and make that a priority this week if I have Gavin Sawchuk in a league with waivers. Nate and Chris are not as worried. They both have him at a 3, which I should probably go ahead and say, like, why are we worried about Gavin Sawchuk? If you didn't pay attention to Oklahoma this weekend, Gavin Sawchuk this past weekend against Temple ran the ball 6 times, for 15 yards, which is a 2.5 yards per rush. Not a great performance, even with only 6 carries there. Now, I don't think we need to get too far ahead of ourselves with him only getting 6 carries. This was Oklahoma playing a G5 opponent. That's the dice you roll on week 1 with all of these lopsided matchups. Sometimes you're going to get guys that pop off for 15 to 20 yards a carry, and they only need like 6 to 8 carries to have themselves a great weekend. We'll get some of those guys here in a second. But, sometimes you get 6 carries and for some reason, it's just not your day. You only get 6 opportunities and you end up with 15 yards like Gavin Sawchuk did. So obviously I think once Oklahoma starts playing some, SEC competition, they're going to rely on Sawchuk a little bit more. They're going to get him more than 6 carries. I do think I am a little worried because there has been all this talk during the offseason about Sawchuk not quite getting that workload we expected at the end of last year, right? Like, they're bringing back Barnes. Barnes got himself a good amount of carries here. Taylor Tatum, the true freshman, actually looked really, really good for Oklahoma this past weekend. So I'm starting to worry that, again, we are going to get a bit more of a committee approach there. That isn't to say Sawchuk won't still have his big weeks. I'm not, clearly I'm not putting him on my bench or anything quite yet. I mean, maybe if I have some really good options on my bench, maybe I sit him down. But for right now, I'm willing to at least start him for one more week here. So, again, like I said, I got him at a 5. I think especially if you drafted Sawchuk as one of your top two backs, I think you have to be making running back a priority on the waiver wire just in case things don't improve for Sawchuk and this continues to be a bit more of a committee situation than we were anticipating. Similar thing here with Damian Martinez. Damian Martinez, the running back out of Miami, Florida, formerly of Oregon State, this past week against Florida, he had 15 carries for 65 yards, no touchdowns, got one reception for 0 yards. So a single digit performance for Martinez. I have him at a 5, similar to Sawchuk. Chris and Nate, once again, they're not as worried as I am. They got him down. Nate has him at a 2. Kay has him at a 3. My deal here with Martinez is that it's very similar to Sawchuk, right? Where I think if you drafted Martinez thinking that you're going to get an anchor for your running back room, like you're a potential workhorse here, you definitely have to be a little worried about the split that we saw this past weekend. Now, don't get me wrong, as Kay pointed out to me, he got 15 carries out of 33. That's still 45% of all the rush attempts for this team, so that's still pretty solid. So I'm not worried about that as much. It's more about the fact that it's very clear to me that this staff is still going to continue to work in Mark Fletcher as much as possible and Jordan Lyle, the true freshman running back they have there as well. They got plenty of carries on Saturday as well. And you got one of them, Fletcher, coming off of an injury. So I have a feeling that we aren't seeing the workload share that we are going to continuously see down the stretch. Jordan Lyle's a freshman. He got worked in on Saturday as well, and I think that his share is only going to grow as the year goes on because he looked pretty solid at times. And so I think that that's what I'm more worried about with him right now. Again, I just think that if you drafted him as a potential workhorse, as a potential guy that you can rely on week to week, you need to be looking at the waiver wire for some running back options just in case things don't improve. Maybe Nate and Chris are right. Maybe there's nothing to worry about here. Nate definitely doesn't think that the touchdown vulturing that Damian saw this past weekend is going to continue. If you don't know what I'm talking about, Mark Fletcher got 2 touchdowns versus, you know, Martinez getting 0, even though, again, Martinez had the most amount of carries of everything. I personally think that if I had either of these two on my roster, I am prioritizing looking for a backup option either on my bench or potentially looking at the waiver wire to try to beef up my running back room just a little bit. Another two guys here, we got one running back and one wide receiver. We got Abu Sama, the running back out of Iowa State, and you got Evan Seward, the wide receiver out of Oregon. Abu Sama, the last two guys, I was the warrior, and Kay and Nate were, you know, chilling like villains with Martinez and Sawchuk here. It's the opposite here. I got Abu Sama at a 4. Kay's got him at a 5. Nate's got him all the way up at a 7. Nate is very, very concerned that Abu Sama's just not as good as we thought he was going to be. I'm a little less worried. He only got 5 carries in the win versus North Dakota, 36 yards, averaging 7.2 yards per carry there. Also got a reception for 0 yards, didn't really go anywhere with that. My deal is that I didn't draft a lot of Abu Sama this offseason, mostly due to the fact that, again, I was a little worried compared to a lot of the running backs in that range that Abu Sama was very inconsistent, and we got that again this game. Abu Sama in his 5 carries, it was either 1 yard or less, or he was going 9-plus yards. Like, it was very, very inconsistent. Got banged up around the fourth quarter, kind of sat the rest of the game. When people were first saying that, it made it sound like that he had played only like half the match and then, you know, got banged up, so they sat him the rest of the time. No, he played through a good chunk or all of the third and a little bit of the fourth, so he was out there quite a bit. My thing is that, again, I'm definitely worried, right? I got him at a 4. I'm monitoring this closely. I'm definitely getting to the point. I could have put this at a 5 where I would be if I had Abu Sama. I'd be looking for a backup plan just potentially here, especially early on in the season, right, where those waiver wire options at running back are going to dry up quicker, like sooner rather than later. So I honestly might move it up to where Kay has him at 5. He's got a tough matchup against Iowa this next upcoming week, which is going to be obviously going to be a tough start no matter what, but I think if there's a game that's going to show you whether or not Campbell and the staff are going to rely on Sama down the stretch to win them games, I think that's going to be it. You're going to get it here. We can dismiss this past weekend, or if you want to dismiss this past weekend, you can by saying like, oh, they're playing North Dakota, right? You're not going to throw them out there for 15, 20 carries against an FCS opponent that you know you're going to win by. If you're going to rely on him, you got to sit him. Well, next week's Iowa, that's a rivalry game early on in the season here. It's a good defense. If they're going to rely on Afusama, that's the game they're going to do it. I'm not looking for production next week necessarily from Afusama. If I'm deciding whether or not to be benching him and keeping him moving forward, I will be looking for opportunity, right? Can he give me 15 to 20 touches in that game against Iowa, right? That's what I'm going to be looking for. If he can't do that next week, we got a really big problem with Afusama. Next one here, Evan Stewart, wide receiver out of Oregon. None of us are worried. It's what I'm going to say. None of us are worried. Myself, Nate, and Kay all have Evan Stewart at a 3. I honestly might have bumped myself down to a 2 because I'm really not worried about this at all. Yes, not a great weekend for Evan Stewart. 5 targets, 3 receptions, 1.5 fantasy points there. Just not a very productive weekend. But if you watch that Oregon game, it was very a weird game overall. They clearly were holding a lot back on offense. The entire offense was completely vanilla. To me, there are two major, and I mean major, indications of this. One, Dylan Gabriel got 0 rushing attempts in this game. You are not going into a game plan for a legit game where you're going to tell Gabriel, we're not going to rush you at all. That's not happening. The other thing was where Gabriel was throwing the ball. Gabriel threw the ball 49 times in this game, which is kind of crazy to me. But if you look at where he was throwing the ball, 22 of Gabriel's 49 passes were over the middle and shorter than 10 yards down the field. That's about as vanilla as you can get. Tez Johnson ended this game with like 15 targets. Clearly why. He was the only place that they were really throwing the ball whenever they did. If you count the number of times that Gabriel threw beyond the line of scrimmage on the outside, it was 8 times the whole game. I don't know about you guys, there's no way. Oh, in addition, he also only threw 2 passes beyond 20 yards. I don't know about you guys, that's not Oregon's offense. That's not what they're going to be doing the entire year. Clearly, super vanilla, and the places that he was targeting were not the places that were going to benefit Evan Stewart. Obviously, we wish we could have known that before this weekend, but if you're so worried about everything, Evan Stewart is 3rd in passing snaps at 40 among receivers. The next closest receiver was Kyle Kasper at 15. Stewart's clearly one of your top 3 guys here. Stewart saw the 2nd most amount of targets among the receivers at 5. Guys, he's going to be fine. I think that it was just a weird, wacky week 1 versus FCS kind of deal. I wouldn't worry about Evan Stewart at all moving forward. Last 2 that we'll discuss here is wide receiver Jeremy Bernard out of Alabama and Noah Smith, wide receiver out of Sam Houston. 2 guys with complete opposite trajectories right now when it comes to the freakout scale. Myself and Nate, we're at a 2 with Jeremy Bernard. Chris Kay's at a straight 1. We're not worried at all about Jeremy Bernard. Again, very similar to Evan Stewart. We think it was just a wacky week 1 performance against a lower opponent here, right? Yes, Bernard only had 1 target, caught that 1 target for 17 yards. That was it for his production. Obviously, it sucked if you started him this past weekend. I put a lot of money on Jeremy Bernard overs this weekend because I really thought, I'm like, okay, he's clearly their top guy. They're going to go ahead and get him some work this weekend. Not the case, turns out. But regardless, he's still 1 in passing snaps among all the wide receivers, right? It wasn't like he was being dropped down to the 2nd team or anything like that. Bam only threw the ball with Jalen Milroe like 9 to 10 times in this game. I can't remember off the top of my head how many pass attempts he had, but it was not a lot. So the opportunities just weren't there as well. I just really think I wouldn't worry about this at all. If you're concerned, bench him for another week, see what happens. I'm personally starting with him with confidence in almost every league that I'm doing next week, unless I just got incredible wide receiver rooms or something like that. Like, guys, Bernard was the talk of camp all spring. He was the talk of camp during the fall as well. There's no way he's not getting involved moving forward. He'll be fine. Meanwhile, Noah Smith, we got a problem here. Noah Smith among targets for Sam Houston wide receivers was tied for fourth among targets. Ife Adeyi got 6 targets. Quavis Humphreys, who we mentioned a couple weeks ago on the show, got 5 targets for 93 yards and a touchdown. Noah Smith was 4th among wide receivers. Simeon Evans beat him in targets. He had 2 targets for 11 yards. That was it. And you might be thinking, like, oh, maybe, you know, they were blowing out Rice. Maybe they didn't really need him a whole ton. Noah Smith was 2nd in wide receiver snaps. Ife Adeyi was 1st. Ife Adeyi, currently, if you go by our typical metrics of targets and pass snaps, is the wide receiver 1 for this team right now. We are drafting Noah Smith as that guy. Quavis Humphreys, while he only got 13 pass snaps in this game, again, got 5 targets on those 13 snaps. This is a guy that was talked about in camp as potentially becoming the wide receiver 1 for Sam Houston moving forward. And considering his first game back, I don't blame them for kind of limiting his snap shares there. I think he's going to improve as the season goes on. At the very least, this is no longer Noah Smith's show in this passing game. Last year, he was incredible because he was literally the only thing working for Sam Houston's passing game. Now, at best, he is competing with Adeyi and Humphreys for those targets, and that is going to make his stock go way down moving forward with Sam Houston. And if you believe some of the metrics like Chris Moxley was pointing out to us in our CFF Slack, Sam Houston, while the points look good for their offense, there's a lot of things there that kind of indicate that that's not going to be replicable for a lot of matchups moving forward. And so if you're worried about Sam Houston's offense, in addition to Smith potentially becoming a second or third option most weeks for this passing game, you could be in big, big trouble if you're relying on Smith. I got him at a 7. Nate's got him at an 8. Unless you have to, you should be benching him. And you absolutely should be targeting some wide receivers on the waiver wire this week in order to make up for the potential miss that we have here with Noah Smith. So that's our freakout list. Again, some of the other guys that we potentially consider, Ricky White, Squirrel White, and TJ Harden. I guess I'll just give thoughts really quickly. I think Ricky White, you're more concerned about just the passing game in general. I think that, you know, Houston came into that game plan with bracketing Ricky White that allowed Jacob de Jesus to do well. I think White will be mostly fine moving forward. Squirrel White, if I had to give him something, I would be giving him like a 5-6, because I think there's a potential that we're just completely misreading that Tennessee wide receiver room moving forward, and there may not be a true number one wide receiver in that room moving forward. And then TJ Harden, I'm definitely at like a 5-6. Again, as much as I love Harden, that was a pitiful performance against Hawaii this past weekend for UCLA as a whole. That's going to spell trouble moving forward for the Bruins there. All right, so that's our freakout list. Let's move on to our waiver wire traps. These are guys that, you know, did really well this past weekend that I'm telling you, if you pick them up off the waiver wire, it is going to be a mistake for you moving forward. So let me take a small break here. All right, and we are back. So again, as I mentioned before, again, these traps, these are guys I'm telling you to avoid, and I'll have 5 of these guys for you guys pretty much every single week. And I'll try to hit on the highest point scoring guys that I can, that I believe like you should just avoid altogether. That way, again, like there's nobody sitting at the top of some of these scores, weekly scores, that'll be tempting you here. So the first one we'll start with here is Ethan Hampton, the quarterback out of NIU, finished as quarterback 13 on the week. And to me, this is like the quintessential do not buy into every single big quarterback performance in week 1, especially if you're playing against an FCS opponent. If you notice, if you're watching this on YouTube, every single player we're talking about here today played an FCS opponent last week. There can definitely be some really big, mirages that are put out there with some of these FCS opponents, and Ethan Hampton is a quintessential example of this. Yes, Ethan Hampton had 33.92 fantasy points in 4-point passing touchdown leagues this past week. He passed for 328 yards with 5 touchdowns on only 20 attempts. That is not volume you want moving forward. The fact that he only did that against the FCS, he only had 20 attempts versus an FCS opponent as a first-time starter for this program, I think is rough. And you might be thinking like, oh, maybe he did something on the ground. Nope, 1 attempt, 8 yards. Maybe we see more rushing in the future. Maybe this was a deal like, you know, Dylan Gabriel at Oregon, where it's like, all right, we're not going to rush you hardly at all in this game, even though you could run. The passing efficiency was just absolutely nuts here. Again, Hampton, 90% completion percentage, 16.4 yards per attempt. That is something that is never going to be replicable or counted on week to week. The efficiency here was just off the chart here. That's the kind of stuff you got to be looking for. Just outrageous numbers like that 16.4 yards per attempt, 90% completion percentage, 5 touchdowns on 20 passing attempts. That screams you can't count on him moving forward. Again, maybe he does well in the MAC, but again, against an FCS opponent, we're looking like that's not what we can count on. Next three guys here are pretty much all three running backs, and all three in a way, I would say, very similar to one another. You're talking about high efficiency dudes with really big receptions, and again, to me, a lot of things that just scream not replicable week to week. So we'll start with the first one here. RB8 on the week, Dijon Stanley, the running back out of Utah. This one, I think, is dangerous for a lot of people because they'll see at the top of a waiver wire, oh my God, Utah running back. Those have been great in the past. And this DJ Stanley dude was RB8 on the week last week. He scored 30 points. Guys, he had 6 attempts last week. He had 6 rushing attempts. Now, again, it was an FCS opponent, so you're looking at, you know, potential split there, not as many opportunities you'd normally get. On 6 attempts, he had 34 yards. He had 3 receptions for 150 yards. He was averaging 50 yards a catch. And he scored 2 touchdowns out of those. That's not going to be replicable at all moving forward. Again, if you just boil it down to opportunity here, you're talking about a guy that got maybe 20% of rushing attempts last week and got 3 targets as a running back. That's not volume that you're going to want to continuously rely on week to week. And again, same with Hampton, right? The efficiency number here was off the chart. Again, 50 yards per catch, that's not happening every single week. That was just absolutely nuts what he's able to do last week. So Stanley, no-go there for me. In addition, like again, he got 3 reps in the slot. He only played 10 passing snaps. Like that's not stuff that you're going to want to rely on week to week. The other running back here that I want to poo-poo on here is Wayshon Parker, the running back out of Washington State. He was RB15 on the week last week. He scored 26.8 points. He had 8 carries for 96 yards and a touchdown. He also had a catch for 52 yards and a touchdown. You'll notice there's a lot of similarities here with Stanley. But kind of the main thing for me with Parker is like not that offensive coordinators can't change their philosophies based on personnel year to year. But if you look back at the last 2 years of Ben Arbuckle as an offensive coordinator, his running backs are just not what you want to go chasing. Nakia Watson had 113 touches last year. Davion Irvin Pinpoint Dexter, the running back out of Western Kentucky 2 years ago, had 131 touches in 2022. Here you have, once again, a high efficiency performance on very low volume. Parker had 8 carries. He was averaging 12 yards a carry, including a 54-yard touchdown on the ground. Plus, again, another 50-plus yard touchdown through the air. These are efficiency numbers that I'm not going to rely on at all. Even though Washington State has a really, really nice schedule playing mostly Mountain West competition, Parker's not going to be a guy that I'm going to rely on. The volume's just not there. Next one here is running back Miles Montgomery, the Central Florida running back. He was RB18 on the week this past week, 24.6 points. He had 8 carries for 77 yards and a touchdown, another reception for 49 yards and a touchdown. Basically a carbon copy almost of Wayshon Parker's week here. And a lot of the same points are true. outside of the fact that UCF, again, one has an RB1 in RJ Harvey. It's pretty clear that he's the guy. Miles Montgomery had a really good week here, but his number of carries were roughly the same as Penny Boone and Johnny Richardson. He just happened to be more efficient with his touches, including, again, that 50-yard touchdown catch basically there. Miles Montgomery, I think he's going to be really good in the future. I actually love Miles Montgomery if he's available in your Dynasty League as a waiver pickup in a Dynasty League. But for right now, no. This is Miles Montgomery's great. Potentially, if Harvey went down at some point, but I really think that they might just go to a three-headed monster with him, Richardson, and Boone at that point. So, for the most part, I'm saying Miles Montgomery, leave it alone. Last one here, we'll talk about our only wide receiver that I'm really, really avoiding this week is wide receiver Solomon Davis out of Central Michigan. He was wide receiver 18 on the week. And my thought on this is basically summed up really, really well. Shout out to A. Garand on Twitter for basically summing up perfectly why I try to avoid specific wide receivers early on. Quote, Jared doesn't jump on the low target, high touchdown rate players right off the bat. He's absolutely correct, and Davis is a quintessential example of this. He had four targets among 28 passes. That's a 14.2% target share. So not great. He was fifth, I repeat, fifth among Central Michigan wide receivers in pass snaps. He averaged 27.3 yards per catch. This is just like the old, this screams to me one-hit wonder among wide receivers here. Now, maybe he earns more targets down the line because of this performance, but when you got that high efficiency, when you got a ton of targets, not a ton of targets, you only got four targets on pass snaps that were way lower than a ton of the receivers ahead of him, it screams to me that he's not replicating this at all. Again, he had two touchdowns on four targets, caught all four of those targets. It's 100% reception percentage. That's not happening every single week there. 27.3 yards per reception, that's also not happening per week. I'm not trusting this. Solomon Davis is absolutely a one-hit wonder for me here. I'm not touching it. One honorable mention I am going to throw up here. He's not on the page, but a player that I'm like having a hard time figuring out if I wanted to put on here, because I don't want to sound like a hater, because you guys know I'm not a big fan of Colorado already, but Jimmy Horn had himself a really nice week this past week. 9 targets, 7 receptions, 132 yards, and 3 touchdowns. Dude was just balling. 31.2 fantasy points on the week. But there's something that kind of shakes me here of like, I personally am not targeting Horn here, even though he's probably the most widely available wide receiver for Colorado right now. All summer, there was talk about Horn was kind of falling on the depth chart for wide receivers, right? Shepard and Wester were getting ahead of him. Obviously, Travis Hunter is a beast, and he's going ahead of him. And the fact that, again, Horn started off the season well last year, but really faded down the stretch. I think that this performance from Horn this past week is really a product of North Dakota State not being able to cover four legit options at wide receiver, right? They didn't even try, really, with Travis Hunter. They knew he was going to do his thing. Shepard and Wester, maybe they could handle that. They got some good corners they could put on those guys. But, Horn's pretty good, too. And we're literally out of dudes that can cover these wide receivers. And so I think Horn, if you notice a lot of his production this past week, if you go back and watch that game, dude was just wide open. They just didn't have the dudes to cover four legitimate options. I think Horn benefited a ton from that. If you look, Horn was fourth among all the wide receivers in pass snaps. I think going forward, he'll have his game. So if you're in one of those leagues where, you know, you're not having to sit start, it's just best ball, but you can pick up guys off waivers, I would grab Horn for that. But I wouldn't be shocked if this is the best performance we see out of Horn pretty much the rest of the season. So that's my waiver wire traps. We've already talked about the guys that performed poorly, and we'll see what we think about them moving forward. Now, let's get into the meat of the show here. Let's talk about some of these waiver wire pickups that you guys should be adding on to your rosters. Again, we got a ton of guys to get through here, so let me just take a small break here, and then we'll get right into it with our quarterbacks. All right, we'll start with the quarterbacks here, and the one I'll start with here. Again, these guys aren't really in any particular order. I would say going forward, I'll try to be better about making sure that, like, you know, my number one guy is at the top, and then we'll go from there. But with week one, just having so many different options that we could talk about, really, if they've made it into my top five, you're already seeing which guys I think you should prioritize the most. And number one guy here is Devin Dampier, the quarterback out of New Mexico, rostered on 19% of rosters. Last week against Arizona, he passed the ball 42 times, completed 24 of his passes for 260 yards and three touchdowns, also threw two interceptions. On the ground, he had 15 rushing attempts for 130 yards and two touchdowns. So, why am I giving you Devin Dampier, especially when he's got a pretty rough schedule coming up? He's got a bye this week, then he gets Auburn in week three, but then after that, he goes into Mountain West. New Mexico is one of these few teams that we've actually gotten to see twice so far this season, with them having a week zero matchup there. In week zero, I think we saw the offense show flashes, although they only scored 17 points. I think it was encouraging to see that there was some potential there, even though they faded kind of as the game went on. I think we initially were thinking that this was going to be an offense that, like, you know, they have their flashes this year, but maybe it's more of a next year investment that we're really going to see them really pop next year. Then this past week happened. As I kind of mentioned to you, the stats for Dampier were absolutely insane. The Lobos were able to put up 39 points of offense against Arizona's defense, which shouldn't, you know, that's not the craziest defense in the world, but that's a pretty big jump compared to where they were the previous week, where they, you know, scored only 17 points on offense against Montana State. This is extremely encouraging. And like I mentioned, Dampier threw the ball for 260 yards and three touchdowns. That's great, but even more exciting was that unlike week zero, where Dampier was only able to run the ball three times, Bronco Mendenhall basically unleashed his legs in this game. He allowed Dampier to rack up 130 yards and two touchdowns on the ground on 15 carries. If that is what we're going to see moving forward, you gotta love it. Dampier's quickly becoming a quintessential Mendenhall quarterback in the image of, you know, your Bryce Perkinses, Brendan Armstrong back when he was great, right? With that Mountain West Conference schedule coming up after the bye week, after Auburn, I do legitimately think that New Mexico is going to have plenty of shootouts in that conference schedule, and that's going to make Dampier a must-add moving forward for your teams. So that's quarterback number one. Let's move on to quarterback number two. Talk about Baron Morton. I can hear the groans already. People are tired of waiting on this man. Baron Morton, the quarterback out of Texas Tech, rostered in 24% of leagues this past week against Abilene Christian. He threw the ball 42 times, completed 30% of his passes for 378 yards and five touchdowns. He did run the ball twice, but it was for negative 5 yards. So I think he had one rush of 3 yards and a sack for 8 yards there. So what do I like here? Is this finally the time we're going to be able to see Baron Morton actually be CFF relevant? CFF players are certainly tired of waiting. I mean, Baron Morton went undrafted in a ton of leagues despite captaining what we believe should be a powerhouse CFF system with Zach Kittley as offensive coordinator. But we got a really good start here against an FCS defense. But Morton did look really good. Again, he threw for 300 and almost 380 yards, five touchdowns and 42 attempts. Very much a Zach Kittley stat line there. Morton didn't even really utilize his legs much in this matchup. Like I mentioned, he only had one rush for 3 yards, like in terms of, like, you know, positive yardage. We know he can have more than that if they need him to run the ball. We know that they'll use him around the goal line a lot. So with some consistency at receiver and some luck in the health department, which has also been a big part of Morton's downfall the last couple of years, I do think there's a possibility we could see a post-hype resurgence here for Morton. And what's even better is that Texas Tech's defense looked absolutely pitiful last week, allowing 45 points from Abilene Christian in regulation. That spells great news for all Texas Tech CFF options going down the line when it comes to them being able to be forced to score in bunches in order to stay in games. If Morton stays healthy, I really don't think there's any reason why he should be floating out there on waiver wires. So Wharton's got great matchups coming up here. Again, you got Washington State, who just gave up 30 points to an FCS opponent. You got North Texas, who just got done with their own shootout against South Alabama this past week. And then Arizona, it remains to be seen what their defense really looks like. Again, they played Wyoming this past weekend, whose offense, especially without Harrison Whaley and without John Michael Gillenborg, their offense looked pitiful. And so I think Arizona's defense is a little bit remains to be seen there. But again, lots of great matchups from Wharton coming up here. You just got to pray that he stays healthy. Another quarterback here that I think is worth looking at is Mr. J.C. French, the quarterback out of Georgia Southern, currently rostered on 7% of rosters. He's got a pretty nice upcoming schedule in the next couple of weeks here with Nevada this week, SC State the week afterwards, and then you got a tough matchup against Ole Miss, but then you get into your Sun Belt Conference schedule, and I think that'll be great for him. French, despite the fact that it looks like that there's some rumors that David Dallas would take a spot atop the quarterback depth chart, French really showed on Saturday, in my opinion, why he's the most intriguing quarterback we've seen under Clay Helton at Georgia Southern. Obviously, Helton's got his air raid system that's provided us a really nice safe floor with the likes of Kyle Van Trees, who finished top 20 quarterbacks that year. Davis Brin, when he was healthy, had some really, really great weeks there. However, French has something that neither of those guys had, and that's a true dual threat ability, right? In Saturday's game against Boise State, French had to play some hero ball in order to keep up with the one-man wrecking crew that was known as Ashaginti. He ended the day with 50 passing attempts, totaling 322 yards and two touchdowns. So, you know, the completions percentage wasn't super great there. Again, 56%. But he also had 16 carries for 39 yards and another touchdown on the ground. That was 66 plays that Georgia Southern played where J.C. French was at the center of it. That is volume that you love to see in a quarterback. And while French couldn't will his team to a win there, again, that usage, that volume, huge plus moving forward as Georgia Southern prepares for that Sun Belt Conference down the line. I think that French is going to have some really, really nice matchups going forward, and I absolutely would be looking to add him in leagues where, again, especially if I'm looking at my or on my bench there and I grab some quarterbacks, I'm like, oh, those are kind of high floor guys. Maybe I go with a safer option here. French is an easy pickup for me over some of those guys. Same with really all of these guys. Next one up here, I do think there's a bit of a teardrop between French, Morton, and Dampier compared to some of the rest of these guys. But the rest of these guys are still pretty solid here as well. Next guy here I'll talk about is Owen McCowan, the UTSA quarterback, rostered on 8% of leagues here. He, this past week, 38 pass attempts, 28 completions, 340 yards, 3 touchdowns, as well as another touchdown on the ground there against Kennesaw State. He's got some decent matchups coming up. We got Texas State this week, got Texas the next week, which is given what they did to Colorado State. And then Houston Christian the week after that. When it comes to Owen McCowan, I really should have trusted my gut on this one. My gut was telling me that McCowan was going to keep or was going to win this UTSA quarterback job. And he did and looked really, really nice. The one thing that really stuck out to me, because again, we'll get into some of these other quarterbacks, especially when we get into the honorable mentions. I think it was a little hard for me to kind of discern who I was going to really highlight here. But one thing I really wanted to point out here with Owen McCowan and UTSA was this pass-to-run ratio we got in this game from UTSA. UTSA was leading this whole game, and that would tell you, oh, they're going to run the ball more, especially when you got backs like Kavorian Barnes, Robert Henry, and the like back there. Yet they still threw it more times than they ran it. They threw the ball 38 passes to 34 rushes. To me, that speaks to how much work McCowan's going to get in the future, how much the staff actually trusts him to throw the ball. Now, again, granted, against Kennesaw State, they won't be able to play them every week, but I do think that we're going to see McCowan provide some of what we've loved out of Frank Harris moving forward. And probably the one thing that'll come back, or that'll be lesser than what Frank Harris did, is that McCowan's not as mobile as Frank Harris, but I also don't think he's going to be a statue, really. This was kind of one of the pleasant surprises to me from this past weekend is that McCowan did get some rushing. Now, he finished the day with 0 yards rushing, but he had 10 attempts. And so if you take away the sacks, He had 5 rush attempts for 34 yards and a touchdown. Obviously, they need to clean up those sacks there, but if he has games where he's not getting sacked 5 times, he'll end the day with some positive yardage there. And again, clearly they're willing to use him around the goal line based on his 1 touchdown in this game. So I don't think that's bad at all for a guy that I thought was mostly going to be a statue in this offense. I like McCallum quite a bit moving forward. So next guy up here that I have, last quarterback that I'm really going to highlight here is Brendan Sorsby out of Cincinnati. Like I have mentioned with McCallum, he is somebody that I was kind of struggling compared to a lot of the honorable mentions of like, all right, do I highlight him or some of the other guys here? I think what made me decide to go to Sorsby here is, one, the fact that he had a really, really good positive fantasy day here without really using his legs as much. And also the fact that, so that speaks to a higher ceiling than even what we got this past weekend. And he's got a really, really nice schedule pretty much the entire rest of the way. And so if we look at what he did this past weekend, he passed the ball 31 times for 383 yards and 2 touchdowns. And then on the ground, he had 5 rushing attempts for 5 yards and 2 touchdowns. So that's over 30 passing attempts in a block, 12 yards per attempt. So that there's some efficiency I'm a little bit worried about there, obviously. But for his first start for Cincinnati, he was absolutely dealing. He had some really, really nice plays throughout this game. And like I mentioned, he didn't really use his legs all that much, which we know for a fact is part of his game. And so even if, again, if I'm looking at efficiency, like, I don't, okay, maybe he doesn't do 12 yards per attempt. Maybe he breaks it down to even 8-9 yards per attempt there. And you're looking at, you know, a stat line of 250 to 300 rather than 383. One, that's still really good. But two, he can more than make up for that with some additional rushing going forward in the future. So I think he'll make it up with his legs in most week. And then, like I mentioned, he's got himself a really, really nice schedule moving up. Pitt is his next opponent. I think that's a really, really good milestone game. If you pick up Sorsby this week, I keep him on the bench for 1 week. See how well he does against Pitt this weekend. That'll be a really good measuring stick as to what the rest of the schedule will look like for him. Because moving forward, he'll have Miami, Houston, Texas Tech, UCF, Arizona State, Colorado, West Virginia, Iowa State, Kansas State, and finishes with TCU. I don't know about you guys, but if Sorsby's who I think he is, I don't think there's a game on that schedule where I wouldn't start him moving forward. So that's the reason why I'll highlight him here. I like Sorsby a lot. I liked him in the offseason. I'm glad that he had a really nice start to the season here, but I'll put the caveat out there that Emory Jones was literally QB1 for college fantasy in week 1 last year before he fell off. So fingers crossed Sorsby does not follow that exact same trajectory there. All right, I'll throw out some honorable mentions here. Oop, I just realized that we got the wrong honorable mentions up. My apologies to that on that for everyone. There we go, quarterbacks. So a couple of honorable mentions. Again, for me, a lot of these guys are in the same tier as, you know, Sorsby and McCallum. So if you want to pick these guys up, I think they're great ads. Obviously, I wouldn't say that unless I was mentioning them here. I wouldn't mention them here if I didn't think they were good ads. But Blake Shapen at Mississippi State, obviously balls to the wall there when it comes to that Mississippi State offense. Peyton Thorne out of Auburn, I don't love the fact that we had really high efficiency performance there from Peyton Thorne. I don't think we're going to get that most weeks. He passed for over 15 yards per attempt. He had 4 touchdowns. Can't really point to a game last year in conference play that Thorne was able to do that last year, but we'll see. Again, he's got the nice rushing floor there. He had 4 attempts for 49 yards and a touchdown here. I think he'll be good moving forward. Diego Pavia obviously looked really, really good for Vanderbilt this past weekend. Scored over 30 fantasy points there. His volume wasn't great. He only passed 16 times. Obviously, his rushing was phenomenal. 26 attempts for 104 yards and a touchdown. Is he going to do that every single week? No. I think Pavia is a great guy to grab and place on your bench and strategically put some starts in there. I think Vanderbilt's offense with Jerry Kill there and that whole staff there, I do think that, you know, we're going to see a more effective Vanderbilt offense that we've seen the last couple of years, especially with the pieces they were able to bring over. Cedric Alexander's in his second year. He looked pretty solid. He was somebody that I could have put on the waiver list, and I actually probably should have, but I didn't. But Pavia, I think, is great if you want to grab him and strategically place him. Ethan Vasco is a guy that I absolutely could have put in my top five here. I think he actually might be my favorite among these five honorable mentions here. Again, he looked really, really good against Jacksonville State, a conference opponent there. 19 attempts for 249 yards, two touchdowns. Also ran the ball 12 times, 39 yards and a touchdown. I think that he's going to be he was averaging almost 30 points per game last year when he got the start for Coastal Carolina. He got 27.86 fantasy points here in this game. I think he's going to be a very safe floor play moving forward. And then last but not least here, Kirk Francis. Rostered only 2% of leagues here. He might be what we've been wanting guys like Braylon Braxton and Davis Brin to be at Tulsa the last couple of years. He looked phenomenal in this start here. 30 passing attempts, almost 300 yards, four touchdowns. Ran a little bit, but that's not really his game. I think that if you're somebody who is really betting on guys like Davis Brin and Braylon Braxton in the past, I think Kirk Francis is your next guy up there. So that does it for the quarterbacks. Let's move on to the running backs. I'll have to come back in the graphics here to get to those wide receivers later. That's my apologies, everyone. So let me get a sip of water. And then we'll get right into it here with the running back. So as I kind of hinted at earlier, running backs I think are going to be a little bit harder to find on the waiver wire this year because we just had so many great guys coming back from last year and so little opportunities for us to really find value in backfields that weren't really settled. So I think we're have a bit harder time, and I think that's all the more important why that if you did miss on running back in your draft, that you try to get some of these guys early on here. And I think there's nobody more important really than Anthony Tyus, the Northwestern transfer running back from Northwestern, now at Ohio, who this past week, again, 16 attempts on the ground, 203 yards, two touchdowns, also caught a couple of passes there against Syracuse. Phenomenal performance for Tyus there, 33.6 points there. Sometimes in the CFF industry, we just have to admit when we got one wrong, right? Like Ricky Hunt, myself included, and a lot across the industry, was touted as that next Ohio running back after his 5-touchdown game as a true freshman against a Georgia Southern team in their bowl game. Again, we as an industry really did not give enough credence to Anthony Tyus transferring in from Northwestern. Now, granted, Power 4 backs in the past transferring to the MAC have really tended to go one of two ways, one of two extremes here. Either they completely disappear into the ether and we never hear from them again, or they become just absolute monsters at this level. And it looks like Tyus is taking the latter route. And to me, I think he really showed why he's the clear top back for the Bobcats. Again, like I said, he was incredibly efficient this past weekend against a Syracuse defense who I think admittedly clearly has some defensive problems that'll get fixed under first-year head coach Fran Brown. Again, phenomenal performance here, right? I think that with Ricky Hunt only getting really 6 carries in this game and averaging less than 3.5 yards per carry, I think that Tyus will be clearly the main dude moving forward. I can't imagine the staff not giving Tyus more and more run as the season goes along. So I think that he's one of the must-grabs of the week. One, he's absolutely a must-grab for anybody who drafted Ricky Hunt. Like, he would be number one. I'd be like, I would be trying to correct my mistake as much as possible. But even still, even outside of Ricky Hunt drafters, I think he's an absolute must-add if you can, and to bolster up any running back rooms. Let's move on to Desmond Reed, the running back out of Pittsburgh here. The news that Rodney Hammond would be deemed ineligible for the entire 2024 season really took a lot of us by surprise this past weekend. And, you know, it'd been expected that the Pitt Panthers would be employing another committee running back split like they did last year. Rodney Hammond would be the leading guy, and we were all sitting there like, do we really want to invest in this too much? However, it looks like with Hammond out that the Western Carolina transfer here, Desmond Reed, might run away with this backfield league. On just 14 carries this past week, Reed accumulated 145 yards and a touchdown on the ground with a couple of receptions to boot. Normally, you guys know me, I'd like to see some higher volume. There's obviously some really big efficiency there with 10 yards per carry, right? But Reed only played a portion of this game since it was a blowout. Plus, if you look at Reed's efficiency compared to every other back on this team, he just blew them out of the water. He was averaging 10.4 yards per carry. The rest of them were struggling. I think one hit 7 yards per carry, but he only had 4 carries. The rest of them were struggling to hit 4 yards per carry. If he isn't given more opportunities going forward, especially with Rodney Hammond out, I think Pat Narduzzi should be arrested for coaching incompetence, because clearly this dude was a huge boon to your offense in that game. So I think Desmond Reed's absolutely worth grabbing and sitting on your bench maybe for a week to see what Pitt does moving forward. But I think you potentially have too good of a dude here with Reed not to potentially to pass up on an opportunity to potentially get a really, really good back here. The next duo of running backs that I'm going to discuss here, because I didn't want to just put one guy on here, because I'll be real, I don't really know which one I would happily suggest over the other. But let's look at the Oregon State running back room here. I think that we all knew that there was a potential for there to be a solid CFF option here. You know, like years under Jonathan Smith, they've had a top running back. A lot of that staff was retained at Oregon State. The defensive coordinator was retained. And so we were looking at guys like Jameis Griffin, Anthony Hankerson, and saying like, okay, maybe there's an opportunity here. A lot of guys drafted Hankerson. A couple people drafted Griffin. And it turns out the answer to which one to draft was potentially both, because they both got 20 plus carries this weekend. Again, Griffin got 20 carries, finished with 160 yards and 2 touchdowns on the ground, a couple of receptions there. And then Anthony Hankerson, the Colorado transfer, 24 carries, 155 yards and 2 touchdowns. No receiving work for him there, but regardless, you're talking about two guys with 27 plus fantasy points on the ground here for Oregon State. I mean, like, kudos to the staff. Like, I think that they have identified the strength of their team, and it's just running the dang ball. I don't think they really want to throw the ball that much. And they got a two-headed monster here. Now, do I expect them to get 20-plus carries every single week? Probably not, right? But again, going against Mountain West competition, I think that, you know, they're going to be able to run on most of those teams any given week, right? And so, if I have to, like, if I know some of you are going to ask me, like, if I have to pick one, I think I'm actually going to go with Griffin. I know some people do like Hankerson quite a bit because, you know, talent edge there. But, you know, Griffin, if you go back and look at the play-by-play of this game, Griffin got the first 7 carries of this game. He fumbled the ball. You know, that's going to get you kind of taken down a little bit there. Hankerson comes out. He looks good. I think Griffin has signs that if they have to pick one each week, they're going to go with a guy like Griffin who's been with the program for a long time. He's clearly a veteran here. I think he is the safer floor of the two moving forward. But, I mean, Hankerson, shoot, looked pretty solid as well. So we'll see what they got. And, again, this schedule moving forward for them is going to be great. Obviously, the Oregon game there in week 3 is not fantastic, obviously. But the rest of the way, Purdue, Colorado State, Nevada, UNLV, Cal, San Jose State, Air Force, Washington State, Boise State. Like, is there a team among the rest of that schedule outside of Oregon that you really think, like, oh, Oregon State can't run on these guys? I don't see one. So I think both of these guys are worth picking up in your leagues if you're able to get them. Let's move on to our next running back here, and that is Floyd Chalk the IV, running back out of San Jose State, the transfer from Grambling, rostered in 12% of leagues this past week. He was able to carry the ball 18 times for 87 yards and 2 touchdowns. Despite some of the San Jose State beat reporters insisting that Jabari Bates would be getting plenty of run here, Chalk's clearly, again, 18 carries, clearly the top back in the Spartan backfield. After a pretty sluggish start on offense, the Spartans did find their groove in the second half, a lot of which had to do with Chalk salting this game away. We've seen from Craig Sutsman in the 1 year that he was an offensive coordinator at Utah Tech that he's willing to feed one running back during his time there. Remember, that was actually Kwalee Conley at Utah Tech back then. And he also saw much of the same at Texas State. So I think it's kind of been grooved into him of like, hey, have one guy that you can rely on. So I do think that Chalk should be rostered in all leagues. He'll provide a lot of solid matchups down the line with Mountain West competition. I will say the one thing I'm a little bit worried about with Floyd Chalk is the fact that, we had one reception for 17 yards. Maybe they get him more involved in the passing game moving forward. But a lot of his points in this game didn't come until after the Spartans had retaken the league. I did start him in one league this past week, and I was worried for a lot of the game before finally, in the second half, they really kind of got him going there. But if they fall behind, I do think that he is very game script dependent, and that would be very, very worrisome because I don't think San Jose State's a offense right now that is really built to get leads early right now. So we'll see. Last running back here that I really want to touch on is Justin Marshall, the running back out of Colorado State. I'm chuckling a little bit because, man, I got to eat some crow. I've had people ask me all summer about Justin Marshall and like, oh, do you like him as a value? And I've said every time, I'm like, I'm fading him. Like, I don't believe that he's going to get that much rushing production for Colorado State when they got so many of their guys coming back, like Kobe Johnson, you got Damian Henderson, and you got not Van Shield, who there was one more that was coming back, and you got Jay Norvell's history of running a committee. I just didn't really see a reality where Marshall was really going to break away from the pack. Well, I was wrong. I was just straight up wrong, because all Marshall did this past week against Texas, of all teams, was get 27 out of the 32 carries for the Rams. I can't do the math off the top of my head, but that's a pretty dang... Here, do the math real quick, Jared. Yeah, that's only a 78% carry share. You know, just casual. I don't think I've ever seen a running back get that many carries. Now, I don't think that's fully sustainable, right? But clearly, in their toughest matchup on their schedule, they were relying on Marshall, and he was able to rack up 106 yards against Texas, which is no small feat. Like, I think that, one, it's pretty clear that Marshall is a huge part of Colorado State's game moving forward. And then, two, like, once they get to the Mountain West portion of their schedule, if he can rack up 100 yards against Texas, he'll be fine against most Mountain West competition. And there's going to be a lot more scoring opportunities for Marshall moving forward. Again, you might say like, oh, he only had 11.2 fantasy points this past week. Guys, I'm grabbing any running back that's going to be 25 to 30 touches potentially any given week here. And once they get into that Mountain West competition, they can score in bunches. Marshall's going to be great. So I'll eat my crow on Marshall. Good job, everybody that drafted him. He's rostered in 28% of leagues right now, so this is probably the last chance you're really going to be able to grab him. Just two honorable mentions. I'll throw my third in here because I should have made him on the graphic. But Cedric Alexander, my boy at Vanderbilt, he looked really good. He looks a lot better in this Jerry Kill offense over there. He had himself two touchdowns on the ground this past week. Clearly the number one back in Vanderbilt's backfield. I'm hoping that stays true throughout the schedule. But as I mentioned with Pavia, right, there's going to be clearly some games that you're going to have to sit him. The other two honorable mentions are very similar themes here. One is Marcus Major out of Minnesota, who this past week, 20 carries, 73 yards, and a touchdown. Very much a plotter. But if you're a Darius Taylor manager and you're concerned about how long Darius Taylor is going to be out for, I think you have to go and grab Marcus Major. I don't think he'll hit the highs that Darius Taylor grabbed, but he'll plug in for a couple of weeks there, right? He'll get you your 20 carries, 75 to 100 yards, and a touchdown or two, and you move on with your life, right? Like, I think he can kind of plug that hole for a little while until you get Taylor back. Because clearly, as the staff showed last week against UNC, if Taylor's not there, Major's getting that volume. And then the other one here is Sire Gaines, the true freshman running back out of Boise State, rostered in 14% of leagues here, which tells me he's available in a lot of dynasty leagues, which is like, blows my mind. Like, if you're in dynasty league and he's somehow available, like, go and grab him right now. Gaines, as of now, is the clear RB2 at Boise State. This past week, he had 12 attempts for 110 yards, a touchdown. Also had three receptions for 44 yards and a touchdown. And I that stat line to me clearly tells me he's got the talent to take over as the lead back if the Broncos ever needed. God forbid something happened to GNT. I am a little worried because Jonbrae Dubar, Breezy Dubar did not play this past week, and so I'm curious to see maybe what that split looks like going forward once Dubar comes back. But for right now, I just got to take the information I have in front of me, and as long as Gaines is the RB2 for Boise State moving forward, he's got his own value. As we saw this past week against Georgia Southern, he doesn't need, you know, he doesn't need 20 touches to get himself a really, really nice week. He only had 15 touches this past week against Georgia Southern and racked up 28.9 fantasy points. Like, he was phenomenal this past week. And so, and we've seen in the past that RB2s for Boise State, they run the ball enough that, you know, both George Helani and Ashton Giotti were able to be productive at the same time. And so Gaines, I think, is absolutely worth grabbing, really, no matter what, so long as Dubar is out. So let me take a sip of water, and then we'll get over to the wide receivers. All right, let's get started. So wide receivers, I think, is if you're struggling at wide receiver, I think you are happy this week because there's a lot of good options on the waiver wire this week. And we'll start with the guy that I think is probably the number one target in all of the waiver wire because I think he's just going to have an absolute monster season for the Spartans. And that's Nick Nash, the wide receiver out of San Jose State, former quarterback there. Normally, for these waiver wire shows, I forgot to mention this at the beginning of the segment, so my bad, y'all. I try to keep everything below 30% rostership on Fantrax because I want to make sure I'm talking to you guys about guys that are pretty widely available for the most part. The one guy here that I'm going to break this rule on is Nick Nash. He's rostered in 32% of leagues just because I think he's that important, right? I think he's the guy that absolutely should, if he is available, he needs to be rostered. I wouldn't be surprised if he's, you know, 70, 80% rostered really by the time this weekend's. Oops, sorry, hit my mic there. My apologies, y'all. So let's talk about what he did. Well, this past weekend, he only had 17 targets, 10 receptions for 170 yards and 2 touchdowns. He was the thing that sparked that San Jose State offense, finally. They were struggling to begin, and then once they figured out, oh yeah, we got a really, really good wide receiver here in the slot, Nick Nash, let's just keep throwing it to him. I think that is the... Like, once that happened, Nash could just absolutely top off. I don't even, like, again, I would call him, like, the top option in this offense, but I don't even really think that seems to do him justice. And again, Nash was second in the nation in targets this past week. He had 17 targets, only behind Pafele Ashlock, who had 19 versus UCLA. Nash has been moved to that, like I mentioned, he's been moved to that slot position after playing outside in the previous years. That is huge news for him moving forward. This means that this is not a one-off deal, because if you look at Craig Stutzman's history, both at Texas State, which again, he didn't call plays back then, but he was the wide receivers coach, and at Utah Tech there, Stutzman has favored that slot. And so it was a big miss for a lot of these beat reporters for San Jose State to never mention once that Nash is moving to the slot. Otherwise, I think myself and a lot of people in the CFF industry included would have jumped at that. We would have said, because we all knew, like, okay, we can target the slot, but man, Nash, he's an outside guy for the most part. Well, Nash has moved to the outside. I think that's huge for his value moving forward. Nash is absolutely a guy right now that you can grab right now, and I think he is probably a guy that finishes in the top 12. Wide receivers this year. I think he's in, like, this is an offense that's going to be bad. This is an offense that is going to play behind a lot. And I think Nash is the perfect guy for them to continuously rely on week to week. You look at this upcoming schedule, Air Force, maybe not the best in the world because you're going to have limited scoring opportunities there, but Kennesaw State, Wazoo, man, phenomenal. Just phenomenal all the way around. I don't see an opponent on the schedule really that I'm sitting there thinking, don't want to start Nash in that game. He's going to be fine. I think he'll be scoring a bunches all year long. The next guy that I have here is probably in the same tier as Nash for me, only because I'm a little biased because I've loved this dude for a long time. And that is Damon Ward. I'm so glad that he is under 20, under 30%. So that I can remind everyone of his value going forward. If you can't tell, Ward is one of my favorite offseason targets in drafts. I own him in a ton of leagues. And if you can't tell, Eric Morris as a head coach has always favored his outside wide receivers. Last year he had Jay Macklin. But with Macklin transferring out, North Texas was really left with a huge hole to fill that outside position. And Damon Ward was really the only experienced wide receiver there that had any experience on the outside among all of those guys. Like, yeah, they had some intriguing guys like Landon Sides, who didn't play this past week. You got DT Sheffield coming over from Washington State, who also, I will say, had a pretty nice day yesterday as well. But Ward is clearly the top target. Again, he's that outside wide receiver that they're favoring here. Saturday, Ward finished the day with 12 receptions. He had 15 targets with 230 yards and two touchdowns against South Alabama, not a conference opponent, but, you know, a G5 opponent, a team that is on their level, like something you can use as a measuring stick for when North Texas gets into the AAC matchups here. Obviously, I don't think that Ward's going to get 200 plus every single week, but this is an incredible example of a system play working out for CFF. And as long as North Texas doesn't do something weird, like stick sides out on the other side, on the other outside wide receiver, Ward, I think, is one of the priority adds and waivers for leagues this year. But quite frankly, if you're in one of the leagues with me, sorry, he's already been taken. All right, let's move on to our third wide receiver here. We're going to go with Luke Weisong, the wide receiver out of New Mexico, rostered in 6% of leagues. Similar, like as I mentioned with Devin Dampier, we've seen two games already out of Luke Weisong, which is part of the reason why I put him here, even though there's a number of wide receivers I could have gone with here. We've seen him in two different games against two different levels of competition, and what I love is that we're actually seeing some really consistency early on here. Weisong so far for this Lobos offense has been the go-to option for this passing attack. In both games, he eclipsed 95 yards and 7-plus touchdowns. In fact, against Arizona, an even tougher opponent than I would say than Montana State, Weisong was relied on even more. He has targeted 11 times, 8 catches, 129 yards, and a touchdown. Mendenhall is known for basically, once he finds a receiver that he can rely on, you're locking that guy in for 100 targets any given year. And currently, if you take the first two games here, Weisong's on track for 108 targets on the regular season. This is your Bronco Mendenhall wide receiver one, and I think he's absolutely going to be featured for New Mexico moving forward. He'll be relevant no matter what kind of game script New Mexico finds themselves in, which to me makes him a pretty excellent addition to a team, like a CFF team out there that needs kind of a safer floor option, a wide receiver each week. I think Weisong is absolutely your guy. Again, obviously a tough matchup there in week 3 against Auburn, but as we saw against Arizona, like unless Auburn just absolutely clamps down this offense, Weisong's still going to be pretty fine. Again, he got over 100 yards against Arizona. Auburn I think is a better defense, but no reason why I don't think that if you're struggling to pick guys to start, Weisong could probably still get you back some value there, so we'll definitely see. All right, let's move on to another wide receiver. And another guy that I kind of have to eat a little crow on, because, again, I was really convinced that, you know, Sonny Dykes was never really going to give us that top-end wide receiver options here, but looks like we're probably are going to get that with TCU this year, man. Got to talk about Savion Williams, the wide receiver out of TCU, 17% roster ship there. This past week, he had 17, count them, 17 targets, so tied with Nick Nash there, for 11 and pulled in 11 of them for 85 yards and a touchdown. Now, as I mentioned before, do I expect 17 targets for Williams every single week? No, they are going to spread the ball around quite a bit, but again, when he has 17 targets, I have to talk about it. And granted, I would like to see more efficiency out of Williams here. Again, 7.7 yards per catch is kind of pitiful, especially with all the hype that I've been hearing about him. I'm kind of hoping for some more downfield shots here in the future. But regardless, you guys know I'm a sucker for these high volume receivers. I think he's absolutely a must add in PPR formats. In PPR formats, if you're getting a guy that has a ceiling of 17 targets in a single week, you got to go with him. And then on top of everything else, I love Josh Hoover. I love Josh Hoover, and I think he looked really, really good against Stanford this past weekend. I think that he's a good enough quarterback to consistently get guys like Williams the ball every single week. And if you look at TCU's schedule, again, man, that Big 12 conference just looks better and better for CFF as we get along. Because, man, there's not a ton of matchups I'm really worried about, especially over the next 3 weeks. TCU is going up against Long Island, which, if you like, you know, those like generic FCS teams that kind of show up in, you know, CFP 25, right? It's like everybody, like somehow FCS Southeast is playing like five games in a single week. That's how I feel about Long Island. That's like Long Island just shows up on schedules every single year, and I'm just like, holy crap, do they just never play a real FCS team? Because it feels like they're on like 12 different FBS teams every single year schedule. Anyway, enough ranting about Long Island. After that, you got UCF, you got SMU. Again, there's not a game that I'm worried about for TCU players here. So Savion Williams, absolutely a guy that I'm looking to add here. Last guy that I will truly highlight with wide receivers is Coleman Owen, the North Arizona transfer wide receiver coming into Ohio. As I kind of mentioned before, when we were talking about Anthony Tyus, clearly I think Syracuse has some defensive issues that he didn't figure out. Again, giving up, 22 points to a MAC team is not always the best, but regardless, a MAC receiver performing this well against Power 4 talent is always notable, in my opinion. And it's even more notable when he gets 14 targets in this game, with the next receiver only getting 8. Owen got 14 of 27 pass attempts from Parker Navarro. That's over half. That's an insane target share. Now, again, obviously, I don't think that's going to happen every single week, but it's super clear, again, against talented opponents, they were relying on one of the guys that they're clearly going to rely on moving forward. He'll be a huge piece of this Bobcats offense going forward, and really with only Kentucky to worry about in terms of a week 4 matchup, I think Owen's a must add in all formats. If he can put up 10 receptions, 137 yards against Syracuse, I can't even imagine what he's going to be able to do once he gets into MAC play. I am all in on adding Owen in as many places as possible. So those are the main 5 wide receivers that I wanted to add. I'm going to get us back to that page here. I have a ton of wide receiver honorable mentions that I got to mention here today. I actually couldn't fit them all onto one page here. That tells you just how much I love these guys. First one I'll mention here is Kyrese Rowan, the slot wide receiver out of Utah State. You guys knew me. I love myself a good system play. He had a really nice game this past weekend, 131 yards and 2 touchdowns. The main drawback is that he only had 5 targets, so clearly hyper efficient. You're talking about 43.7 yards per reception. Clearly that's not going to happen. But I trust with him being the starting wide receiver for Utah State and them getting a little bit better than how they started off this game, I'm okay with taking a shot. Definitely don't start him, but if you're like completely struggling or if you're in a deeper league, I think Rowan's absolutely worth an add. Another guy that I liked a lot in the off seasons was Trevor Penna out of Syracuse. He had 7 targets this past game, 76 yards, 2 touchdowns. He got another touchdown on the ground. He had 3 rushing attempts for 9 yards and a touchdown. This, I think, is your volume play for Syracuse's offense moving forward. Again, you can see he had 7 targets. He also had 3 opportunities on the ground there. I think, again, Zed Haynes, another guy I liked, got banged up in the game against Ohio there. So if that continues to be a problem, I do think Penna is probably the add of wide receivers. If you want to target the Syracuse passing game there, I mean, shoot, Kyle McCord threw the ball 38 times. That tells me that, again, they're going to throw the ball quite a bit there. Another guy here is Harrison Wallace, the Penn State wide receiver. I don't want to trust a Penn State wide receiver, but this passing attack, at least through one game against West Virginia, another Power 4 opponent here, Penn State's passing game looks a lot better. Again, Wallace got 9 targets, reeled in 5 of them for 117 yards and 2 touchdowns. If he is Drew Aller's go-to guy, we've seen in the past Penn State have a top-end wide receiver in Jahan Dotson, so I'm willing to grab Wallace as a guy that, you know, I can rely on Penn State to score against most opponents not named Michigan or Ohio State. And so I think he'll be a pretty solid add. Another guy that I think we need to be talking about a bit more, obviously Josh Kelly looked great this past week for Texas Tech, but the other slot receiver there, Coy Eakin, was a guy that I kind of started mentioning a bit more on Twitter towards the end of, like, hey, like, he had a really solid finish the last year, and there's a lot of talk about him still being one of the starters there for Texas Tech. He had himself a nice game this past week against Abilene Christian. Again, 8 targets, 5 receptions, 76 yards, 2 touchdowns. Obviously, not going to expect that every single week, but I think that as I mentioned earlier, if Morton is healthy and they get some consistency in this passing game, I think there's weeks that both Eakin and Josh Kelly are startable options. So I would be willing to add Eakin in some deeper leagues. Another guy similar to kind of Harrison Wallace that I don't want to trust, but I can't ignore what happened this past weekend, is Isaiah Page, the Old Dominion wide receiver. Had himself a nice game against Western Kentucky, but man, against South Carolina, a SEC opponent here, 15 targets in this game. So clearly Old Dominion will be relying on him moving forward if they're going to trust him against that tough of an opponent. 8 receptions, 115 yards, and a touchdown. Granted, most of that came on a 72-yard touchdown there. But even still, I don't want to trust Page because he has been, like, Old Dominion's passing game has very much been up and down the last couple of years. But again, 15 targets in a single game. Can't ignore that. And then we'll move on to our last 3 wide receivers that I'll throw out here as honorable mentions. Cam Thomas, the UTEP wide receiver, had the most targets among all those wide receivers for UTEP. Again, going up against a tough defense in Nebraska, UTEP decided they're going to rely on Thomas here with 11 targets, 7 receptions, 71 yards, scored a touchdown against the Cornhuskers there. I like the direction that UTEP's offense is moving here. And so I think that Cam Thomas, I'm willing to grab him in some deeper formats as a potential investment as a top-end wide receiver once you get to the CUSA. And then the last 2 guys here, I would say, are probably my favorite among the honorable mentions here. Ty Felton out of Maryland had himself a really nice day. 9 targets, 7 receptions, 178 yards, and 2 touchdowns against UConn. Normally, I would have had him in my top 5 wide receivers to add, and he probably will be back there again next week if he has another nice week next week. But, you know, he only had 9 targets compared to some of the other guys. That's actually a pretty low number of targets. And then I am worried about Maryland's going forward with their schedule. Again, they play a pretty tough Big Ten schedule there. And so I can't feel like I can trust Felton fully week to week, but clearly, like, he is their go-to guy in this Maryland offense, and that has been profitable for us in the past before. So he's obviously a guy that I would be willing to take off of waivers. And then last but not least, the Corey Rucker, not revenge tour, but the resurgence tour, off to a really, really good start here. Again, I kind of mentioned that Corey Rucker had some really bad touchdown luck last year. He was the number 1 target for Arkansas State last year, but somehow scored 0 touchdowns in the regular season. Well, he's off to a really good start against Central Arkansas here. 13 targets, 9 receptions, 179 yards, and a touchdown there. I think Corey Rucker is absolutely worth adding here. I think he's back in his form here. I like what I saw out of him a lot. So that does it for the wide receivers. Let's scroll through these tight ends here real quick. Once I get back to that page, I'll try to fix the order of these graphics next week, y'all. My apologies there. We'll keep on talking. There we go. Tight ends. Somebody hide Eric Froton because there's a new Tito in town. If you don't know what I'm talking about, a Tito is a tight end in name only. These are quite common in CFF circles where you will have a guy that clearly is playing a receiver role for his offense that somehow still has a tight end eligibility in their eligibility for Fantrax. And we have a new one in town. His name is Jack Beck. Formerly a tight end slash wide receiver at LSU. He didn't really do much there, but now he's at TCU. He hasn't played tight end in years, but he somehow still has that tight end eligibility there. And boy, oh boy, he could be an absolute game breaker here. This past Friday, we saw Beck performed very, very well against Stanford. Beck was second on the team in targets with 9. He brought in 6 of those catches for 139 yards and a touchdown. 9 targets for anybody with tight end eligibility should send a massive flag up to everybody in the community saying, hey, hold on, let's check this guy out. Even more so that he is not an actual tight end. He fully plays receiver. He does not have a single inline snap in this game this past weekend. TCU, as I mentioned before with Williams, they're going to pass a ton so long as Josh Hoover continues to play well and that defense continues to bend and break at every opportunity. Beck, to me, if you don't already have a guy like Harold Fannin, Luke Lachey, Rondae Gadsden or anything like that, like if you don't have one of those guys locked in, I think Beck is a must add this week. Like you're fighting to get Beck off the waiver wire this week. Like I mentioned before with William, the schedule is great. If he's a top 2 target in this offense, absolutely worth adding. And I should have also mentioned before that Beck actually played more snaps than any other wide receiver for TCU. If you can get any tight end, any tight end that has the number 1 pass snaps for their team is worth rostering in CFF. So if you need anything else, I don't know what else to say to you. Beck is clearly the number 1 option for tight ends this week. Got a couple of other guys that are more in line with the typical tight end waiver wire ad. You're talking about guys, you know, like 5 to 6 targets, clearly have a big role in their team moving forward. And one of those guys is Grayson Barnes, who does have the wide receiver tight end designation, but unlike Beck, actually does play a lot of tight end. But clearly, again, big receiving option for this NIU offense. 6 targets this past week, 5 receptions, 95 yards, and a touchdown. I think that once we get out of this early schedule, Barnes will be better down the stretch. He's got Notre Dame this upcoming week, which sucks. Gets Buffalo, that's nice. Goes to NC State the week after, and then we're going full into MAC. I think that if you're going to grab Barnes, he's very much an investment play to play down the stretch. The other tight end that I want to throw out here is Joe Royer. Shout out Nate Marquise for kind of throwing this name out in an article right before the season started. This is a guy that back in Ohio State, CJ Stroud was giving a ton of credit to. Well, now he's out of Ohio State, lands here at Cincinnati, joining his former teammate in Evan Pryor, who had himself a nice week, by the way. Royer this past week for Cincinnati. Again, Cincinnati needs some good pass catching options. Obviously, they got Xavier Henderson, who looked really good this past week, but I think Royer is going to be a big part moving forward. Tons of reviews out of camp, and he comes out swinging on the gate here. 6 targets, 5 receptions, 89 yards. Doesn't pull in any touchdowns, but I think that'll change as the year goes on. I think Royer is absolutely a guy to go and pick out if you have a tight end that you're sitting there looking at being like, my guy only had like 2 targets last week. Should I drop him? Yes. If you can go and grab a guy like Royer, who I think will have a big role in the Cincinnati offense moving forward, yeah, absolutely. All right. Oh, one last thing that we need to cover. I almost completely forgot about this, is some DST streaming options for this upcoming week. So a lot of you guys, if you have picked up our CFF guide this offseason, you'll recognize quite a few of these teams. They're in our defensive streaming guide there, but I really want to point out some of these ones that I think are really, really good values right now. Minnesota, rostered in 2% of leagues right now. They got an FCS opponent this week. One thing that I think people need kind of forget is that last year Minnesota was like mid-50s in defensive performance, which is obviously not fantastic, but the years prior with PJ Fleck, he's had a top 10 defense at Minnesota. They were off to a really good start against North Carolina here to start the season. I do think that obviously, you know, North Carolina had their own offensive issues, but regardless, I think Minnesota is a really talented defense. They should be able to shut out a FCS opponent with relative ease, I would say. Same thing with Rutgers. Already Rutgers had himself a really nice week last week. They get Akron this week. They are a very, again, very much rush heavy team. They're going to limit possessions for their opponent. Akron couldn't score against Ohio State last week. Obviously, Ohio State's defense is really solid, but I think Rutgers, honestly, their defense isn't as far behind as you might think. And so I think Rutgers is a really good candidate for a shutout this week. Texas A&M has an FCS opponent this week. I think they're going to want, after their loss last week, they're going to want something to wail on. And I think that poor FCS team is going to get absolutely destroyed. LSU, we saw last night against USC, that this LSU defense is pretty improved compared to last year. And so I think, again, their talent's going to be able to wail on some FCS deep or an FCS offense here. You got them mad after losing to USC this past week. I think that LSU's defense is really solid to pick up. They're only rostered in 11% of leagues. And last but not least, Missouri. 23% rostered. They get Buffalo this week. They shut out their FCS opponent last week. I think that they're going to do the exact same thing to Buffalo this week. So those are five DST streaming options for you guys out there. And with that, holy crap, I kept this right at an hour and a half. I'm impressed with myself. I thought we were going to be here for 2 hours. With that, we've come to the end of our show. Appreciate all of you guys for listening. My voice is now very hoarse for talking for so long. But if you have not already, go ahead and leave a like, a comment, and a subscribe if you're watching this on the YouTube side of things. If you're on the podcast side of things, make sure you follow the show. Make sure you leave a 5-star review wherever you can. Make sure you check out the rest of the Campus Canton Podcast Network for shows ranging on pretty much anything you can think of related to the college fantasy game. We'll see you guys back here on Wednesday, where we'll be previewing week 2, give you some start and sits in that week. Be on the lookout on the @ChasingNatty account for our tweet that will make sure that you guys get your chance to get your sit start questions answered on the show. Again, we're only doing about 3 to 5 of those each week now, but that's your best way to get them in. Until then, really appreciate all of you guys, and I hope you have a wonderful and blessed week. See y'all.